Hello, and welcome to the first Peace and Justice podcast. This one is about something very special, about the campaign for justice for Zain Gbangbola. Zain died because of poisoning by hydrogen cyanide, which seems to have come from a landfill site near to his home. His parents, Nicole and Kai, have worked tirelessly to try and bring this to justice. And in Glasgow during COP26, we had a special session with them, with Natalie Bennett, the former Green Party leader. This podcast will help to inform you about this terrible event and the need to do some campaigning work to stop this happening to any other child or anybody else anywhere in this country. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Things can and they will change. Thank you very much.
Zain was only 7 when he died in February 2014 after suffering a cardiac arrest while asleep in his bed. His father, Kai, also had a heart attack and is now paralysed from the waist down. Zain's mother is heartbroken.
He was the love of our lives, and every moment with him was a moment cherished. And every moment without him is a lifetime lost. And I can't express how much I loved him and how deeply it hurts.
It all happened during severe floods in Surrey. An inquest found Zain died from carbon monoxide poisoning, but his family believe he died from hydrogen cyanide, which they think seeped into their home in Chertsey from a nearby landfill.
These documents say hydrogen cyanide was detected 3 times in your house, not just once as previously reported, and carbon monoxide was never detected. What's your reaction to this?
This wasn't something discussed in the inquest. Hydrogen cyanide was detected in our home. My husband, Kai Zain's father, was 2 yards away from Zain, and he is paralysed due to hydrogen cyanide poisoning.
That's what his doctor said?
Yes. It's what his medical records say.
The documents say that at the levels of hydrogen cyanide found in the house, prolonged exposure could lead to a cardiac arrest, and that the family could have been exposed for weeks. They also say the water pump that the inquest found was the cause of carbon monoxide poisoning was not operating.
The petrol pump wasn't in use, and what was exposed in the inquest was that they seized the pump. They tested it and the pump was faulty. It could not run.
Shortly after Zain's death, a government source briefed the media carbon monoxide poisoning was responsible before a post-mortem was even carried out. In an email ahead of a COBRA meeting chaired by the then Prime Minister David Cameron on the issue, a Public Health England official writes of political pressure to determine whether carbon monoxide is the cause of death.
Zain's case is about the intersection of human rights, climate justice, and political conduct. In lay terms, it's where climate change meets oppression. And thankfully, allies and people are rising up. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Corbyn, for inviting us to this global event at this time that is rather challenging. At COP26, as people, Nicole and I, know the direct climatic impact from the cruel death of our son, Zain, nearly 93 months ago to the day. It would have been Zain's 15th birthday last month, and he would certainly have been here marching and speaking in his own right, as he helped to found the now thriving environmental team of students and teachers at his school. The bottom line here is that Zain died and authorities lied. There's no dressing up that's needed. We come before you as grieving parents, denied all rights to truth and justice, even the right to grieve in peace. Following the first storms in the UK attributed to climate change by a UK Prime Minister, flood water passed through landfill into our Victorian flood basement and our home was infused with nerve agent. Zane was killed. In addition, we have climate storms, we have the flooding, we have landfill, we have nerve agent, which is a truly horrific way to die. But there's a fifth element, hospitals that were overwhelmed, unwell people, as identified by Public Health England's disclosures. Now, I'd like you to ask yourselves, was the impact of high numbers of unwell people one of the prompts, because there would be several, one of the prompts to cover up what happened? You see, to support commercial interests that harm our planet, over public protection, is the perverse mutation many governments have become. The need to work for a greater good, driving thriving global communities for mutual interest, is a struggle that the UN and COP needs to succeed in. But like most institutions, the standard setters, I fear that the UN have insufficient control over their charges, where and whose habit, and this is their charges, is self-interest, irrespective of fact or science. People are realizing institutional abuse and corruption really does exist. It really is a thing. Perpetrators conduct a form of bureaucratic violence hidden by the legitimacy of a system willing to back them up. And for me, telling you the truth, there will be and there are always repercussions. Whilst institutions, they can feed fake news at will. Zane's tragic story holds within it the burning issues of our time. Climate change and its devastating impact on people's lives on the one hand. Malfeasance, cover-up and abrogation of social responsibility by our elected representatives on the other hand. If we cannot achieve justice for Zane and ensure protection of people from flooding and landfill hazards, what chance will achieve what's urgently needed internationally? As parents, we cherish our little ones. They are not random dead people when it's your child that was laughing and playing next to you what seems moments before. For the time Zane was with us, it was beautiful and very inspiring. When he was interviewed for the school journal, Zane said that people think that sustainability and being green is about looking after your garden, but it's about looking after a bigger garden that belongs to everybody. It's important that you hear Zane's own words to understand how much he loved people. Zane believed in service before self. Even on his final day, he was out ensuring that the elderly in the area would get their medicines despite the floods. It is indeed a perverse disgrace that a child who only did good to help others would be betrayed by self-serving people with no interest in doing the right thing or doing their duty. The government is caught out and shamed by making the statement that Zane died of carbon monoxide poisoning caused by exhaust fumes from generators and pumps used to clear floodwater. The statement is a willful and cruel deceit spread from the very day that Zane was killed. It is also the tip of the iceberg our leaders are unwilling to acknowledge, where further deceit will only result in more death and harm. Little children should not be tucked up at night and fear that they will not wake up in the morning. This rock is already rolling. I ask you to get on board and be Zane's voice. See the enormity. Indeed, you may have children of the same or similar age. And understand that you would hate this to have ever happened to them. So please use your power and call for an independent panel inquiry. Use your power to prevent untold human suffering. I'd like to thank you for listening, and gratitude to the Peace and Justice Project. Rest in peace, Zane.
It's an unbelievably horrific story. And obviously all our sympathies to you, and you're unbelievably brave in doing it. And in Zane's memory, this campaign's got to go on. And when we had a discussion with Natalie and yourselves just before we came in here, we talked about the military sites around the country that are unmarked, unregulated. Indeed, as I was telling you, as a child, I used to play on an old military dump in Shropshire. I've no idea what was in that dump. I still don't. And there is no regulation that requires the military to tell us what's there. So the questions that come to my mind are, in all the horror that your son went through, why was the cyanide there at all in the first place? The Chemical Weapons Convention of 1925 made it illegal for Britain to have any chemical weapons. Where did they come from? Who put them there? What were they used for? And the more you delve into this, I'm sure you've discovered yourselves, the more huge and bigger questions come up of the vulnerability of everybody to what your son tragically went through. So really my question is, what do you want us to do? How can we help? What can we do to support? And thank you for sharing this story with us, and thank you for this flower. We shall ever think of this as Zane's flower.
Yes.
Because in the tragedy of his death, maybe a lot more lives can be saved.
There's a lot that can be done, and as you saw in the films, it is understanding that a public need to be protected by those that have a duty to protect them. There should never be a circumstance where people in need are attacked when in fact they need to be protected. That needs to end. It is clear that the climate is changing. It's been clear for a large number of years, as you've observed. And what happens when we have a warmer climate in certain countries is greater rainfall. And that rainfall will get into these areas of land. And when they're into these areas of land, which have a source that includes dangerous chemicals, it will act as a pathway. And what's understood by pathways is that they go to receptors, and receptors are human beings and property. And therefore, it's clear that the water table will rise, it will push gases out of these sites, and they will harm human beings and emergency services and all of those services that you've prior to today had discussions with will be affected. So it is about investing and having clear action plans.
We all rely on emergency services to tell us the truth, and rely on public authorities to tell us the truth, and rely on public servants, i.e. politicians, to be brave enough to relay the truth. And from what you told me and Natalie in the discussion we had and the film, the only service that appears to have been telling the truth is the fire service, who confirmed that there was cyanide there. Everybody else went into this, frankly, nonsense about carbon monoxide from a petrol engine that didn't work and never started anyway.
Absolutely. We owe a great debt of gratitude to the men and women, the brave men and women of the fire service. These people run into danger. when other people are running away from that particular danger. And the circumstances that affect all of our emergency services, especially in flooding, in terms of resilience, is such that they do need to be protected. Now, it is a shame, the point that you raise, when Public Health England had numerous experts that were very clear, and the sequence of events was after a major incident. It goes through area incident meetings, silver meeting, gold meeting, and then eventually goes to an emergency COBRA meeting. And what happened in this instance for Zane's death was they told the truth right the way up until the emergency COBRA meetings. In other words, there were multiple detections of the hydrogen cyanide. There was no carbon monoxide. We had hydrogen cyanide in our blood as people there, and there were multiple people causing the hospitals to be overwhelmed, and the reason why the area was evacuated. You do not evacuate for carbon monoxide. So you would ask the question, as you rightly did, why did other people not stand up and tell the truth of what happened? And you will have observed that the characteristics, the culture and the character of some of our services is different from others, just as we are all different human beings. So we owe that debt of gratitude that what happens in events like this over time, the truth does leak out. And the fire brigade told the truth. They attended Zane's inquest. They told the truth. Five commanders told the truth. They said this was the first inquest they'd ever attended where their evidence was simply ignored. And you now understand from having seen the videos that this was a predetermined situation from day one. So Zane's inquest was somewhat of a farce. Indeed, we sought legal aid three times and were refused. Yet even the coroner had legal aid and an additional legal team. All of the five public agencies that we were against, it felt like we were against, and you know, an inquest is meant to be non-confrontational, but we were being accused of killing Zane. So it's a real shame that the continuity didn't follow through with our public services saying, hold on. And all of them taking a stand, like the fire brigade, fire service did, and saying, no, we must tell the truth, because if you do not recognize what really happened, what chance do you have of being able to protect people in the future? You must recognize what happened. And when you look to the Europe, what happened in Europe with the flooding, there's a marked difference between what happened with us. There was absolute action, empathy, and leadership in the way that they came together with local people and told the truth. In Zane's case, on the day they began disseminating and misdirecting deliberately through the BBC, ITV, Sky News. So we have to ensure that our public services in future are empowered to do the right thing. But the history of secrecy, as I'm sure you're aware, in this country is hundreds of years old. And we are doing well with the benefit of all of those unions that have come along and supported and come to understand that we are entering a different time. We have to bring in new rules. We have to protect people. This is unprecedented. It's a climate crisis, and we have to invest and protect, just like many private organizations do in this day and age. Our public services need to, if they're going to be able to protect the public.
And you've exposed in this film and your own work the dangerous combination of an unregulated military dumping unregulated materials in an unregulated place whose existence was then denied. Commercial interests appear to have played a part in the decision of Surrey County Council to deny the existence of it. You bought your house in good faith, believing it to be a decent, lovely, safe place to bring up your child. And then you end up discovering the horrors of it and the death of that beautiful boy. And that is where the brutality of the lack of regulation, investigation, public accountability leads to. And so I want to know how many more quasi-military dumps there are around the country that we don't even know about, and how much more incredibly dangerous material is being dumped into landfill. And with this absurd notion now of increasing the level of incineration in our society, what's been pumped into our atmosphere that all of us are going to be breathing in the future. And so COP26 is happening here in this city in Glasgow, and we're using this opportunity to bring you here today. But I think we now need to look at what we can do together to campaign on this. And I think that maybe Natalie wants to come in at this point and explain what we're doing about campaigning work. And this is about us working together to achieve some change. But can I finish my contribution by just saying total solidarity and sympathy to both of you, to Nicola and Kai, for what you've been through and your bravery in speaking out about it. Thank you very much. Natalie, over to you.
I want to also begin by paying huge tribute to Kai and Nicole. I mean, I saw them only a few weeks ago at Green Party conference when we held a similar session. And it's a case of working through the what next question. And that's something over many years that I've seen very much develop. And I think we're at a real stage of new development. And I think there's some general things that need to be said first before I get to the real specific. And Kai indeed just referred to this. One of the things what you will see me tweeting often is that justice unfunded is justice denied. And one of the things that, well, I will keep saying whenever I get the chance is, you know, families at inquests at any situation like this, where there's any doubt, particularly of official malfeasance, families have to be fully funded to be represented at that inquest. Because the government line, and I can remember I was Green Party leader then, and I was calling for Kai and Nicole to get the funding. And the government's answer is always, well, you know, as Kai said, on inquests, not adversarial, no one's on trial, so families don't need QCs. And yet what Kai and Nicole had lined up against them was a whole lot of the most high-powered QCs you can possibly imagine all lined up in that courtroom. So that's something, a point I think really needs to be made. And I think there's a broader point which we really have to keep fighting. And we still hear this, you know, from unfortunately a number of sides of politics. Oh, cutting red tape, isn't that a good idea? We've got to cut red tape. And I've always thought that the Hazards at Work campaign has a wonderful line on this, which is better red tape than red bandages. Mm. You know, anyone who goes to work or any child who goes to sleep should be able to know that they will be safe. They will wake up in the morning, they will go home from work in one piece. That's, you know, so every time you hear the word red tape, come out swinging would be my suggestion to everyone here. And I think just on the final point before I get to some real specifics, and this is very much an issue of, as Kai said, of climate adaptation. And Professor Mobbs's film, you know, really showed us how much threat we face as the climate emergency intensifies. And as I was just down in the main conference, World Wildlife Fund saying, you know, don't be mistaken, 1.5, which is the best we can possibly hope for, the idea of 1.5 increase above pre-industrial levels, that's the best we can hope for. And that is still extreme chaos. We are in already very evidently at 1.1, the age of shocks. And that's, you know, we've learned about exponential growth from COVID. We're going to see much more of that. And that means, you know, a bigger, further point, and I say this often when I'm talking about plastics, there's no such place as away. You can't throw anything away. And so we have to stop making toxic weapons, as Jeremy was just saying. We have to stop making toxic substances. You think about asbestos, you think about pesticides, all of the hideous poisons, the dangerous things. And even, you know, sometimes we started without understanding the risks. But we keep doing these things long after the risks are well understood, whatever people can make money out of it. Which, of course, brings to the point about, and Professor Mobbs's film brings out very clearly, we have a government or a governing party essentially funded by developers. We get the politics they pay for, and that means we need political reform. However, that's all the big picture stuff. What I really want to focus on today is something very specific, and I think Professor Mobbs's film sets out what we essentially need, and that's the idea of Zane's Law. And I think we, you know, have the real potential in potentially both houses of Parliament, and there's quite a lot of MPs, mostly Labour, Green, who've championed this. And, you know, these things are a bit of a lottery. There's ballots for who gets slots for private members' bills. But what we can do is really start work on a private members' bill. And I think the key of that is the essentially reinstating that section 143 that Michael Howard took out. The first thing we need to do is actually know what's there, to have the registration and to empower local authorities to be able to go into areas and check out what's happening. If something's, you know, you can imagine there's an old landfill site above a town at the top of a river catchment. And as we saw from that film, the local authority just lacks the power to go in and see what's happening and to order something being done about it because, oh, maybe the landowner can't afford it. Well, we need to change that. So I think, and my experience of private members' bills is the more focused they are, the better.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we really think about getting really focused on one or possibly two points, one is the section 143, the registration. So let's ensure that we have to map what's out there, create a responsibility on every landowner who has any reason at all to think there's something there, to record it, to do the soil tests, to do whatever needs to be done. That's, you know, possibly, you know, you essentially reconstitute section 143. You've almost got the wording already. So that you do that with a private members bill. And maybe you also look at, maybe it's a two-clause private members bill to restore local authorities' right to go into land to do the tests where they need to, where they know there's a problem. Because, you know, people very often have a historic memory of these things. And often people go, oh, you know, these locals, it's just all these old wives' tales. Don't worry about it. The land, we're building these new houses on, it's fine. And I know about this from, if anyone hasn't picked my accent up, it comes from Australia originally. And actually my biggest story that I ever broke as a journalist was about a old creosote factory. It had been in the 1930s, it stopped working in Australia. And in the 1990s, they built new housing on the site. And then all the poison started bubbling up through the garden. And the residents spent quite a bit of time being told, don't worry, just don't let your children play in the garden. Or, you know, maybe we'll put a membrane over it or something. And, you know, eventually what happened was those houses had to be knocked down and finally they were compensated, but took a huge fight. And so, you know, we can't undo the damage of the past, but we can make sure we know about it and keep people safe today. And I think that's what Zane's Law, essentially reconstituting section 143, can do.
Okay, can I say, Natalie, thank you very much for that. We would all get behind this campaign on section 143. This is all of us coming together, all parties that will support, all people that support, and make that a popular campaign which draws attention to the dangers to all communities everywhere of unregulated landfill, unusual storms, and as Natalie quite correctly pointed out, waste dumps completely unregulated for 150 years, dumping all kinds of dangerous stuff in there, which is going to kill us all in the future unless we do something about it. So, yes, there's a big bill coming up. There's an even bigger bill coming up if we do nothing about it. So let's get absolutely behind this campaign. Zane's Law, in memory of a brave and brilliant little boy to make the world safer for everybody else. Thank you very, very much, Nicola, Kai, and Natalie. Thanks for tuning in to the Peace and Justice podcast. Find out more about what you heard in this episode by going to thecorbinproject.com /podcast. There you can sign up to support our campaign, and if you can, become a regular supporter to help fund our work for peace and justice in this country and around the world. Solidarity, and catch you next time.